I'm Sharon Kick, and this is the fifth session on developing self-esteem or working with your self-concept. This is actually is the session I thought I would do yesterday. We got started a little late after the play, and I thought the play was so delightful it was real hard for me even to sort of shift gears into being real serious. So, all of you who participated in the play, folks, definitely to be commended. That was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. But so we ended up doing yesterday sort of a summary of the day before. Some of you ended up hearing that twice, but there were some new people here. But what we want to talk about today is dealing with issues of self-esteem and the self-concept. It's like, how do we account for the problems we may have identified, and what do we do about personal change? Let me read, there are a few more handouts on just sort of supplemental things up on the table that you can pick up afterwards. One of them is a copy of this little poem I'm going to read to you. It's called An Autobiography in 5 Short Chapters. You'll probably only want it if it really is your life story. You know, it's not everyone's life story. I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I'm lost. I'm helpless. It isn't my fault. It takes forever to find a way out. Chapter 2. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place. But it isn't my fault. It still takes a long time to get out. Chapter 3. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it is there. I still fall in. It's a habit. But my eyes are open. I know where I am. It is my fault. I get out immediately. Chapter 4. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Chapter 5. I walk down another street. So any of you who are impatient with yourselves about the speed of your own personal change, be nice. You know, if today you see the hole that you didn't see yesterday, and if, you know, by Christmas time you've chosen to walk across the street and sort of stare with interest at all those other people who are still falling in that hole, that's all right. We don't make those kinds of changes immediately. And some of the questions over the past couple of days have, you know, been, it's like, I know, how is it that I can know that I need this, that I know I have this personal problem or this one issue that I'm real vulnerable about and don't particularly like, and I just can't seem to get past it. The worksheet that I gave you, the top sheet for today, which I've copied up here on the board. Why don't we put these out here? Here, there you go. Is a way for us to start looking at, it's like, why are some of these issues so deep? You know, why are they so compelling? Why are they so basic, you know, for us? And this is just a little grid that I've worked up. I'm going to talk about what's across the top first, and then those issues on the left, and then give us a chance to either talk as a large group or talk in smaller groups. The things that I've seen say that when we talked about the self-concept and how it's developed, that remember that the self-concept is developed from messages from people outside of ourselves. And the most important ones come when we're really very young, but they continue to come to us through our lives. And they continue to come to us even as adults, which is why we can do self-esteem classes for adults. I mean, if it were hopeless, you know, we'd just, you know, we'd write it off and say, excuse me, you had, you know, your parents were under stress when you were born, and they didn't get it together before you were 5, so goodbye. that's just sometimes the way life is. But self-esteem, by the time you're a fully functioning adult, is now your business. It's not particularly useful to go back and beat up on your parents, but it is useful to go back and figure out what might have been going on in their lives at the time that might have had an influence on how free and accepting they could be of you at those moments. Some of you know I have 3 children. they are now 17, 18, and 19. At one time, they were newborn, 1.5 and 2.5. I mean, you don't have to be very bright to know that that must have been awful. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't have been doing a real good job. There's just no way. When we think of all the stress we are under with one infant, to add an infant and two toddlers, I mean, I look back at that and go, how did I ever get through that? And the real tragedy of it was that I didn't even know it was hard at the time. I thought it was just sort of the way life was going to be. So you can imagine how low my self-esteem was at that time. If I thought, oh, of course I will spend all of my time, changing diapers and fixing little baby meals, those little tiny baby meals. Of course I will never have a conversation that has 5 or 6 sentences strung together. So I know, I mean, even if I can't remember having been there, I know that that must have been very difficult. It doesn't mean that I, somehow take full responsibility for all the problems that my kids get into. It's like they too are maturing adults, and they have had to deal with many of these issues. And I think that's what we're talking about when we talk about our own issues with self-esteem. It's useful to know what kind of influences you've had in your past, but that doesn't become an excuse for not taking that, the adult part of your life on yourself. So let me talk about these three places from which we get messages. Scripting and injunctions is a phrase used in transactional analysis, and I think that was fairly popular maybe 15 or so years ago. I'm okay, you're okay, and people were doing things about the parent mindset, the parent messages, and adult messages, and child messages. Scripting and injunctions usually means it's like little lines from our childhood. It's scripts, like lines in a script. It's like, you will be this way. Good girls are this, good boys are that. Daddy's girl does this. Mommy's boy does that. All of those messages, and it might not have been directed particularly at the child, they're just messages in the family that could go from adult to adult that kids pick up. And that's what we mean by scripting and injunctions. It becomes like a rule. That's what the injunction part is. It's like it's a line, but we hear it so many times that we internalize it, and we believe that it's a rule for living. Don't cry, don't show your feelings, don't trust anyone. We talked the other day about, what did your parents say to you when you left the house? I mean, my mom just always said, be careful. I wasn't conscious of her thinking that the world was a frightening place, but she just always said, be careful, which I think was her way of saying, it's like, it's kind of a jungle out there. Like, I have a shirt I was going to wear this morning. It says, I only drink decaf coffee. I say that for the tape recorder, of course. I do really drink decaf, but I have a shirt that says, drink your Java. It's a jungle out there. If you have, those messages that it's fearful, the world is a fearful place, you'll have lots of injunctions about being careful. If, on the other hand, I mean, it's like I say to my kids, have a good time. I guess because I spent so much of my life sort of flat. And that may not be a real whole line either. They're going to show up in a group in 10 years and go, Jesus, my mom, every time we left the house, said have a good time. I mean, what did she expect from us? It's like, you can't always have a good time, And it's often true that we will, in fact, correct, some line, but it still isn't enough. So there are lines we have from our childhood that won't be enough to get us through all of our adulthood. And there may be some lines, some scripting and injunctions, some rules that aren't helping us live. So I'm going to want you to see if you can dig up some of those for yourself. Sex role theory is pretty much based around what's appropriate for boys or men and what's appropriate for girls or women. And again, some of that can start very young, but that can actually carry on farther than that. I mean, you may have some lines that are, that are limiting, or you may not have lines that are limiting, but in fact, if all the men in your family did a certain thing, or all the women in your family lived a certain way, that's like you have that sense in you, it's in your bones, that that's what life will be like, that's how you will sort of, that's what it will mean to be a fully functioning man or a fully functioning woman. And not only does that happen in families, but as you get older and older. You look around and you go, well, here's what men do and here's what women do, and I don't see anybody of my gender doing this. So the issue around sex role theory, particularly of late, with the more egalitarian kinds of things and encouraging women to see themselves in work roles that were held for men, is an area that you might want to think about, because it may in fact be defining your self-concept. Behavior modeling is a little different from sex role theory, although it can be the same. But it's like these are the ways people behave when they're adults. This is just what's okay for an adult to do. So it's more in terms of behaviors, not so much in terms of a theory, and not so much in terms of lines, like little verses that you carry. So you may in fact have someone in your family whose lifestyle was very different, and that may become for you a way to see yourself differently. Many people will talk about having aunts, who were in the family, and the whole family sort of always had to deal with them, that they were very successful, or they traveled a lot, or they were very eccentric, or something. And that becomes, and sometimes, a corrective to the behavior modeling of just your own parents and of other siblings. Is there a question about any one of those three? Do you sort of see those, and are you beginning to think of examples about how that might have affected you? Okay, down the left side, it's like what we're looking for is the I'm lovable and capable. Those would be messages that would help us have a good self-concept, be able to manage ourselves well. In other words, believe that our being is good, and that that our skills are good, that we are capable. And what I'm going to ask you to do is sort of move across the chart here. It's like, where do your messages, where are your lines coming from about being lovable and capable? Who fed you those kinds of lines? Who, in some ways, just delighted in you? And both those lines as a child, but by now most of us have really significant adults who have fed us some of those lines. Say, you don't have to live like this. You can do this. Who's the first person that ever said to you, are you going to go to college? I was thinking about that the other day. That never came up in my family. It's like, where did that come from? And graduate school, my goodness. It's like, if they didn't think of college, goodness knows they didn't think of graduate school. Where did that come from? Who said to me, well, what graduate school are you going to go to? As if, of course, I was. I do remember that one. I do remember that. That was really staggering for me. And I did. I did go to graduate school. Because that person just had assumed, it was a person I valued, had just assumed that I was capable and could do that. Most of us, I've talked with many people about, and I don't know if men have this, some of you men can tell us, but women often have this belief system that, and I'm not sure if it comes out of sex role theory or modeling or where it is, but it's like if somebody really knows, they're going to find out that this has been a bluff. It's like, this is really a charade. And someone's going to sort of scratch the surface deeply enough and find out that we really weren't competent all this time. There are some nods in there. Is that a thing that men sometimes have? I think it's possible, particularly with the push for men to, of course you're going to work, of course you're going to be doing this, of course you're going to support your family. It's like women at least have sort of come upon that, late. So I would think that that's possible on both sides. So think about, where did these come from? Who in terms of sex role theory, who do you sort of model yourself after? And is the model that you have for yourself going to take you to the place that you're becoming? And both in terms of sex role theory and in terms of just some new way at looking at putting life together. The other thing, of course, is to look at these two areas of negative messages. The I'm invisible or omnipotent. Now, we talked about those two yesterday. They're really, the flip side of the same problem. Thinking you can control every reaction, everybody's response, thinking you can control the whole world is just the opposite of you can't make any difference at all. Did you see that? I mean, it's because it's not real. It's not a realistic self-concept. You can't, I mean, you can't. We are neither invisible nor omnipotent. So some people will err on the side of one or the other in terms of their internal reality. And some of those statements that got broken down, it seems to me that it wouldn't be a surprise if people would either sort of pick up all the ones on one side, pick up the ones that have to do with doing, and that those would be the omnipotent ones, or pick up negative self concepts in terms of being, and that those would be the invisible ones, the entitlement kinds of things, the approval kinds of things, I think, are often on the invisible side. Or the bottom one, which has more to do with the external reality, I am helpless or angry. And sometimes you just have to think, it's like, well, how did my family approach life? It's like, what was their basic stance? I mean, did you, you know, have somebody who always thought somebody was doing them in? Did you, in fact, you know, are you from a family that did have a major, either a major health crisis while you were young, or a major economic crisis while you were young? And how did they deal with that? I mean, those are just some of the things that really happen in people's lives. And oftentimes, the way that people have handled that will give you a picture that says, you know, I can't do anything about that. Or, you know, if I had done this, this, and this, this wouldn't have happened. Or, to get down to this side, it's like, you know, the company did this, or the economic situation did this. And to respond in terms of anger. Does the grid make sense? Anybody have any questions about that? Okay, what I would encourage you to do is... and again, because I think this can be kind of overwhelming, but if you can identify the one or two issues that you know you're the most vulnerable about in terms of self-esteem, and sort of track that on here, it's like, where does that come from? You know, the low one. It'll probably be down here somewhere. But even, is there a corrective to that somewhere in my system? What you can also do with the areas around which you have the most strength is to figure out, where did that come from? It's like, where did that message come from and that I've clearly by now let in? And, you know, how did I learn that? What happens then is that you begin to get a picture of your own style of taking in information about your self-concept. Like, in what ways are you the most open? Because what you want to do, see, is begin to develop that. And it's like with any sort of force field analysis, what you want to do is use the part of you that has functioned best, the part of you that's the strongest, to work on the part of you that's the weakest, the part that's the most vulnerable. You do have those resources, you know, within yourself. But it's real important to see, you know, if it's because you've got a ton of these lines in here that are just eating you up. You know, I have some handouts on voice traps and voice tapes, so that you begin saying new things to yourself. If your issue is around sex role theory, you know, maybe you need to join a professional group and talk with people who do what you do and do it well, because maybe what you need is another model, someone in your same gender who sees him or herself as successful. And maybe that will help you get another picture, a picture that you weren't able to get from your primary system. With this one, it's like, can you try some new behaviors? Are there some things that you know other people can do and they do it well? And it's like, you know, you look at them and go, that is so different from me. And usually what will happen is there's a little admiration in this. You see people who are so different. They somehow, you really admire the way they've put their lives together. Maybe it's time to start asking them, how do you think about that? I mean, how did you come to a conclusion like that? And why did you decide to do that? And I think that in this area, there's a chance to do some planning, some goal setting for changing, you know, some of your own responses. So, sort of got the task? Is that something you're interested in doing for the next 20 minutes or so with somebody? I mean, I would hope that people would leave with some clear sort of plan of attack. You know, that's the part of me that believes that, you know, 5 one-hour talks on self-esteem is real inadequate, and, you know, wants you always to know that it's, you know, I didn't learn this in 5 one-hour talks either. But that wants you to focus in on It's like, what is it, you know, what is it that I'm working with? And what are my strengths? You know, what have I got going for me? And what's the area that if I get this one worked on, you know, I mean, I'll really be in good shape. You know, we can't get our whole selves in order in one time, but we could maybe find out what's the area that's giving me the most trouble and how can I deal with that. Okay, find yourself a group of people. Introduce yourself again. It's sometimes helpful in times like this for spouses to not be in the same group, but do what you want with that. And we'll take about 15 or 20 minutes for you to identify which of these is most important around the area that you're the lowest, and which of these is the most important around the area that you're the strongest. Sometimes there are families that are real articulate, and then there are families where they just do it. And that might be the difference between, if you have a family that used to talk to you a lot and tell you what was going on, the scripting and injunctions might do it. If you have a family that's essentially not very verbal, this might have caught you over here. Seems to me that might be one reason why some of you just go back and go, I can't find any lines. I mean, I just can't put them together. So then what you have to watch is, what was the whole dynamic of the family and who did they value?
Does scripting and injunctions need to be verbal, or can they be nonverbal? If they're nonverbal, are they behavior modeling?
Usually if it's, you may have developed a line, but if they're nonverbal, it's behavior modeling. That's really the only difference there. Okay? Anybody else? What did you find? Did the grid get you closer to finding a spot, or was it just like, oh, please, this is sort of overwhelming? Yeah,
Ruth? Can you explain the internal reality and external reality, why they are in those
spots?
Yes.
Because what you want to look for is, it's like there's either messages that the outside is in charge, I mean the world's in charge, it's basically sort of a passive stance. This is a more active, the locus of control issue is inside of you, but if it's distorted, it means, you know, you get sort of on one side or the other. And this one is, you know, you have a self that believes that you are lovable and capable.
But reality isn't
No, I mean, what I meant to imply by the top line is, that's the truth. I am lovable and I am capable. I had an aunt who thought I was really terrific and used to say nice things to me. I didn't know anybody in my family who worked until after I realized it. And I've been able to sort of diminish the behavior modeling, blah, blah. Okay, does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Other questions or ways to look at this? We ran out of the last page, although I have one here, just to read through, and this is in some ways just a summary of the things that we've talked about over the past four sessions. Developing a plan to raise your self-concept and self-esteem. Number one, chatter affirmations and positive talk. If you identify that scripting and injunctions is the most critical issue for you, then you may want to pick up one of the handouts on voice traps. There aren't enough for everyone, so I hope that if that's not a problem for you, don't take it, because it may be someone who really needs it. But if you've just got lots of lines that go through your head that you're battling with all the time, then what you want to do is give yourself new lines. So there's both a sort of a long handout, and there's a short handout about self-talk.